This episode is brought to you by Leaping AI. Does your business lose leads to competitors who call them faster? Does your business miss after-hours calls? Do you need to save money on your call center? Leaping AI provides AI voice and text agents that work 24/7, hold hundreds of customer conversations simultaneously, and schedule appointments with no human handholding. Get an edge over your competitors by calling and texting leads faster than ever before. Leaping AI's voice AI agents sound indistinguishable from humans, connect to dozens of CRM systems, and their team takes care of the implementation. Visit leapingai.com today and learn how companies like Jacuzzi Dealer Lifetime Bath are scheduling 50% more appointments daily after implementing AI.
I am on a mission to prove everybody who says I want more leads wrong. It's a misconception in our industry that if I went around and asked everybody how they're gonna grow their business, they turn around and say, well, I'm gonna get more leads. When in reality, if they could get their existing reps to sell more of the business that they had with no additional leads, they would have bottom line money that they never thought they would have before.
Have you ever felt like there's a secret club of successful contractors and you're left outside? Want in? Well, you just found the entry door. Welcome to the Wealthy Contractor Podcast. Each episode, we pull back the curtain, revealing the stories, strategies, and secrets that top leaders use to grow their home improvement business and enjoy more success, more wealth, and more freedom. Discover more at thewealthycontractor.com. Now let's get into today's episode. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Wealthy Contractor Podcast. This is Brian Kaskavalsian. And so last week, I had an amazing conversation with my friend Scott Berman here. And the whole time I'm on the call, I'm like trying to hit record, because he was just saying so much good stuff and I couldn't get it to record. So we just had the whole conversation. And then we said, well, let's try and recreate that conversation and record it for you guys as a podcast. So that's what we're going to try and do. And let's see how that goes. So January was a very, very painful month for Mr. Scott Berman. Very painful. And it was self-inflicted. But why don't you tell us why it was such a painful month? And now we get to find out why you did it and the results of that.
Well, first of all, I don't know if we can recreate that conversation.
No, I don't think so.
I was so frustrated that I don't even know what I was going to do. So basically, the history is, as you know, because we talk probably typically once or twice a week, I've been frustrated for several months based on the complacency of my organization, and in particular, the sales force. I just felt there was no urgency, there was no enthusiasm, and we had some managers who were negative. And so around October, I had my epiphany moment in which I saw a salesman with his feet up on the chair, like it was a lounge at his house. And I walked in, which I would normally never do. And I'm like, is this your house? And the manager was sitting right there, by the way. Is this your house? And he looks at me, goes, no. And I said, well, don't treat it like your house. We have a formality to our process. I'm fairly formal and I don't appreciate what you're doing. And I was like, I had the manager there too, and he just allowed it to happen. And, you know, this was on top of cell phones at meetings, et cetera, et cetera. So I decided at that time that I was going to replace not only my management, but re-engineer my sales process. So we started doing that. I located the people that we were going to hire. I then hired them. We started getting a plan together in late November, early December. I have like a big whiteboard in my office, and on the board it says, unbeknownst to me when I walked in, on the board it says, shut down the sales force and put them up in a hotel for 2 weeks while we retrain. And I walked in and I'm looking at this and I'm like, okay, shutting down the sales force is bad enough, but we're going to put them up in a hotel and retrain them too? Like, how does that work? So I went along with it because it was new management and I felt like, hey, look, you know, I got to give them a chance. And so basically what we did was we broke the Florida Window and Door Group. As you know, I have four companies. We broke the initial group, Florida Window and Door, into two groups, Group 1 and 2. And we put Group 1 in the hotel for 9 days. And then we put the second group in 2 weeks later for 9 days. And what happened was our sales went into the toilet because half our sales force was non-existent. But while they were training, I would stop by the hotel at night, early in the morning, during training, and I would see like guys sitting out at the pool doing role playing, playing their football, you know, reciting the script. And I walked away and I'm like, wow, this is like an NFL training camp. Like we're really, everybody's buying in. So they graduated out of the class and they all made it, by the way. They graduated out of the class. And then we fumbled around for a couple of days. But what was most interesting was that we had 100% engagement on continuing education, on the Zoom calls and the meetings that were after the main training. And so everybody was trying to get better. They were trying it in the house, but really fumbling around. But then they were role playing. And then they started to, the rubber started to hit the road and they started selling. Then Group 2 went in. And Group 2 had a little bit of exposure because they talked to Group 1. And so they did the same thing. We were selling volume that I haven't sold in 15 years, probably. And then Group 2 came out, same experience. And all of a sudden, our sales went not only back to normal, but have exceeded what they were prior to the training. But what's most interesting about it is that the enthusiasm that has been generated by the sales force as it relates to the new training, because it was a new philosophy, and also the commitment that we made to put them up and take care of them and do everything, has really released an energy in our sales force and an enthusiasm in our sales force that we haven't had, I would go on the record as probably saying ever. I'll say most definitely ever. And it's a true testament to my management team, specifically the sales management and the training teams, that they were able to pull this off. And the last part that I think is really interesting is we have salesmen who were really at the bottom of our food chain who are selling just as much now as the top guys were in the beginning, and the top guys are struggling a little bit more because they're trying to get a handle on it. And I think they'll be fine in the end, but I think they're having the most trouble. Whereas the newer guys and the guys who are struggling were looking for a reason to be successful, and they're having success. So prior to getting on, I had told you of a friend of mine who works for me, who's been in, hopefully you won't listen to this, who's been an unmitigated disaster as a salesperson. And all of a sudden now, yesterday he goes out and sells a $90,000 deal and he's all enthusiastic, like, oh my God, I could actually do this. And the guy's a bright guy. His desire is, you know, he's got to justify it in his own right. So it's been a brutal 5 weeks to the beginning of the year, but I think we'll make up the volume over the course of time. And as I say to my team, I'm like, look, we're in this for the long term, so we can sacrifice a month. We could sacrifice 2 months because we had to do something. So that's really what it started with.
Now, the underlying thing here, and this is something you've been talking about for a while, is doing more with less, doing better with what we've got, essentially efficiency, really working on and dialing in efficiencies in marketing and sales and production, installation, customer experience. Just how do we keep making things better? You know, you and I talk about a lot is lead costs are insane. And what too many people believe is, if I want to grow my business, I just need more leads. So talk a little bit about that.
I'm on a rampage about this. I am on a mission to prove everybody who says I want more leads wrong. And basically, it's a misconception in our industry that if I went around and asked everybody how they're going to grow their business, they turn around and say, well, I'm going to get more leads. So I'm going to give you a couple numbers that tell me if, you know, if they make sense to you, great. If they don't, well, you don't have to play the recording. So you have a new rep. Let's forget all the administrative costs and the overhead and everything else. You have a new rep that starts with you and you give them 90 leads for 3 weeks. So basically, the first 3 months that he's with you, you're giving him 1.5 leads a day for 12 weeks. And assuming he works 5 days a week, his NLSI is going to be about $2,450. And by the way, these are numbers out of my organization, so they may change for if somebody else did the math. So over that course of 12 weeks, he's going to generate about $250,000 in revenue for you, net revenue. Your marketing cost for the 90 leads at $700 an issued lead is about $63,000. So I don't have a calculator in front of me, but roughly that's about a 28.5% marketing cost for that one rep. So if you're hiring 10 reps, you can do the math and extrapolate out the $2,630,000 in marketing costs.
25%.
25%, 28% roughly. But anyway, so now you take the same 90 leads with an experienced rep, and he has an NSLI that's double just because he's experienced, and the same guy generates $500,000 roughly in business at the same marketing cost at $63,000. So it's a 12.9% lead cost. Between the new guy and the old guy, the experienced guy, you're generating roughly $700,000 worth of revenue, and your marketing cost is about 17%. So the first thing it tells you is that everyone's looking for new reps, when in reality, they should be working with their old reps, because their old reps is really where they're making money. Obviously, you need new reps, okay? I'm not discounting that. But if you take it on a larger scale, and let's say you have a 65% turnover rate in your sales force, you multiply those numbers and you're talking about hundreds of thousands, or in some cases, millions of dollars. So from an annual perspective, you're roughly doing, you take the same numbers in our case and you extrapolate out a 30% retention rate instead of a 60%, you're talking about a marketing cost of 14%. Meaning you're replacing 30 reps instead of 65 reps, but you're doing $163 million worth of revenue because your existing reps are having more success than your new reps on a daily basis. So everyone's sitting here and saying, I need more leads, I need more leads, I need more leads, and I'm going to spend more to get more. But in order to spend more to get more, assuming that works, you then have to hire the reps that are equally inept in terms of the ability to turn that lead into business. And as a result of that, your marketing costs are going through the roof because it's impossible. Nobody's coming out of training, or very few people are coming out of training and being uber successful in our business. Even the most experienced reps that you take from your competitors, those guys never work out. But let's assume you do that. Even if you do that, the reality of it is that you're spending money that you know 30% of that money roughly is going to marketing costs because the new rep is not going to be as efficient as the old rep. And so if I go to Accelerate and I say, how many people are going to raise their hand on going to increase their lead flow? As we talked about, 90% of the people would say, yeah, I'm going to increase lead flow. Like, that's the number one issue. When in reality, if they could get their existing reps to sell more of the business that they had with no additional leads, they would have bottom line money that they never thought they would have before. Then you get into, well, okay, I can't afford to pay this person. I can't afford to pay that person. I can't hire a trainer. All that money is in that 28 to 30% that drops down to 15% on the experienced reps. So my message to you, or our conversation really to you, was that we're focusing on the wrong thing. Oh, our reps aren't making any money. Well, you didn't train them right. Well, I can't afford a trainer. Well, you can't afford not to have a trainer because you effectively haven't increased your closing percentage. So even your best reps are bad, but your new reps are going to be even worse. And that's where I think the industry has gotten a little bit off center, because the easy thing is to say, I'm just going to increase more leads, but you're actually doing it at a loss. Especially, by the way, if your margins are bad. That's a whole nother conversation.
You mentioned some numbers. And look, Scott's numbers are Scott's numbers. They're big, but you could take a zero off the end. If you've got a $15, $16 million company, you could just take the numbers and take a zero off. And everything he's saying still applies. You could cut that number in half, $8 million company, and it still applies. You can cut that in half and go down to a $4 million company, and everything he's saying still applies. It's just the numbers aren't as big as his numbers, but relatively speaking, percentage-wise, you're in the same place. You're in the same place, right? So if you're paying $600 or $700 for an issued lead today, which is not abnormal. A lot of people don't realize, though, they think that their lead cost is $250 or $300, but they're not factoring in the fully loaded cost. And right. Then they're not considering what you're saying is that if you're not training people and retraining and role-playing and practicing and getting better and better and better at the craft, you're losing a lot of money in that process because you're assigning leads to people that can't close at an effective rate.
As an example, if you have a sales manager and you go into your sales meeting and the sales manager is just pontificating day after day after day about whatever the salesman should do with no role playing in that meeting, that's a bad sales manager. Or a sales manager who really hasn't been taught how to lead a group of salesmen. They should be role-playing, they should be scripting, they should be doing things, they should be having one-on-ones. But in order to increase your closing percentage, you have to be able to commit to doing those things. Now, we didn't always do those things. I don't want anybody to think who's listening that I am preaching like I am the expert because we continually break things and try to fix them. What it comes down to, in my mind, is that, like, take COVID. There were 1,000 people in the marketplace. 2 years after COVID, there's 500 people in the marketplace. Today, interest rates are higher. Financing is lower. The consumer confidence is lower. People are less secure in their jobs. There's less people in the marketplace. And yet, our initial reaction to growing your business is go get more leads. Even though they're more expensive, maybe they're not $700. Maybe they're $900. Maybe the aggregator leads $300. But by the time you set it and you add all your expenses and the cancellations, $700 issued lead. Maybe it's more than Google. But at the end of the day, the answer is not always more. It's not always like, add 10 salesmen, I'll grow my business $10 million. Because if you really look at your closing percentage, you have guys that are closing at 7, and then you have other guys who are closing at 40, and your blended average is 23. Well, your blended average looks bad, but if you cut out some of your bad people, all of a sudden it's 35 and you're still working with a lower group who you need to work with in role play. It's not always the answer of I need more leads because more leads are not always available.
You and I have had conversations with one of our members in Success Society. I'm not going to name him, but did $5 million last year and is completely upside down. Had to go into debt, no cash flow, days away from losing the business and going bankrupt on $5 million in revenue. Now, a lot of people would have said, well, sell your way out of it. Go buy more leads. Just sell, sell, sell. I believe you gave him the same advice I did. My advice to him was, okay, now look, we got to recalibrate your business. We got to raise your prices, get your margins right. We got to understand who we're assigning leads to. And instead of go from $5 million to $6 million next year, let's go to $4 million. But instead of trying to make $200,000 or $300,000, instead, let's go for a 12, 14, 15% net profit. So we're focused on efficiency. We're focused on profitability rather than growth for growth's sake. Because too many people, like you're saying, too many people think that the solution to all this is just more, 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 more. But you and I both know that we can break it at more, more, more.
If you can't do it right at a smaller number, the likelihood of you doing it right at a larger number is even worse.
It just gets worse.
My frustration is, it's like, how many people come up to you and say, I'm going to open another location? Well, let me ask you something. Is the new location, is the existing location profitable? No, but if I open up another one, I'll be profitable. Couldn't be further from the truth.
I had the same conversation last week.
Yeah.
With somebody.
Probably more frequently than you can imagine, I would imagine. Yeah. I think the perception of this whole mindset that you have to do more either to make more, you have to do more to grow your business. I think it's incumbent upon us as leaders to try to do more with less. You make $10, you're not spending $10, you're saving a percentage of the $10. Why? You could spend the 10, but you want to save money for the future. And so this is the same mindset. It's like, if I can't guarantee you, like we have markets today that, you know, Florida's really cold right now or getting a little warmer eventually. I'm sure it's negatively impacting lead flow. But the fact is, if there's less people in the market, I am a firm believer, I can't buy the market. I'm not going to be able to turn another 100,000 and end up with, you know, another 200 phone calls because the market isn't there. I'm going to wait till the market goes and then I'm going to spend the money. But I gotta do more with what I have. The same thing with leads. It's like, why are you as the owner required to give your salesman 2 leads a day and then you can't sleep at night because the leads aren't there, so you spend the money? Why doesn't that salesman go out and get a referral? Why does he go knock on doors? So one of our guys, this is the best line I've heard in a long time, he says, your paycheck is the lead I give you. That's your paycheck. I'm giving you a paycheck. That's your paycheck. You want more? You want a bonus? Go out and sell the job. The paycheck is the $700 in the issued lead. My philosophy has always been, historically, I got to get everybody 2 leads a day. If I don't know how you close, I'm going to give you 2 leads a day. Eventually, you'll get lucky. Not skill. You'll get lucky. You'll sell one. The whole thing is Rilla and all these other things are telling you that you can tilt the scales in your favor, but you have to be willing to listen to the data. And so this is all the things that I'm pointing to, which is Rilla was the beginning of, you can analyze the sales guy's performance. It's the Monday quarterback of being able to listen to it, but it's the metrics of, you got to get your guys better. And if you don't get them better, the answer is not to give them more leads. It's not going to grow your business.
Let's dial it back to when you were smaller. Okay. Let's go back to you 8, 9 years ago, when you had a $5 or $10 million business. Knowing what you know now, how would you have done that different?
If I could go back to recreate an entire home improvement company, I would charge the salesman for a lead. I would say, hey, the lead is $300. But if you sell, for every lead you sell, I'll give you $900. So effectively, you're impregnating in them that a closing percentage needs to be 33%. So that would be the first ideal thing that I would do. I would do it here. I just don't have the guts to do it, although I would like to. First of all, I would put a 10-step training program in place. I mean, I think anybody who doesn't have it at this point, and it doesn't mean it's a one-call close in a nice way, I would put that in place because you can scale it. I would lose the attitude of you need to give your salespeople 2 leads a day. I think that's a mistake. And I would hand out leads based on performance and reevaluate every week. And I would hire a manager who actually could train and teach. I think that's a big thing. Instead of somebody who has an ego who sits there and tells you everything they do and how great they are and the company can't survive without them, et cetera, et cetera. I want somebody who is, you know, an educator, who can train the program, who can do the role playing, who understands what professional development is and can build a sales force from taking the word I out of their vocabulary and using we. And those are hard guys to find in our industry. I also know, and this is just, I hope I don't offend anybody, but like from my perspective, I'm not hiring a guy from Renewal by Anderson. He's not from Pella. He's not one of those guys. He's a guy that was with a no-name company that built his sales force, that understands that we are not fortunate enough to have the brand recognition of Pella or Renewal. And we have to build that trust every single day. And there's a difference of opinion from that person than some of the other people that I just mentioned, with no disrespect to any of them, by the way. But it's somebody who realizes that this is a grind every single day. And that's really how I would start again. And I believe if I knew today, and everybody says this, if I did that today or back then, that I would be 3 times the size I am now, without even a doubt. I remember when I would go to bed at night and I'd be like, we don't have enough leads, and I couldn't sleep. And, you know, I felt terrible. Like, I'm responsible for these guys. How am I not going to do it? But meanwhile, they don't do enough. They don't go out and get their own needs.
Hey, it's Brian. Let me ask you something. Are you running a business, or is your business running you? Maybe leads are inconsistent. Maybe you can't find the right people. Maybe you're working harder than ever and your numbers still don't reflect your effort. Or maybe you've grown the company, but it still can't run without you. You're still a salesperson, still the problem solver, still the one putting out fires every day. And if you're honest, it's starting to feel less like a business and more like a job you built for yourself. That's exactly why we created Success Society. It's a group of serious home improvement business owners who want to build companies that actually work for them. Companies that produce real profit, real freedom, and real growth. If you're curious whether it might be right for you, I want to invite you to book a free business growth consultation with my team. We'll take a look at your business, identify what's holding you back, and give you clear next steps to move forward. If we're a fit to work together, great. And if not, you'll still walk away with clarity. Go to theentrydoor.info and book your call today.
And I use the analogy all the time of the fat guy at the buffet. I'm like, your salesman's a fat guy at the buffet on the cruise ship. You feed him, he eats. He's not hungry, he's still eating. That's what we've done to our sales force. So why are they going to go get referrals when they know they have two more leads tomorrow? Doesn't work. I had lunch with a friend of mine who's a competitor of mine a week ago, the same size as I was, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, maybe eight or nine. I mean, we basically got started at the same time. You know, he's done a good job. He built a $20 million roughly company. We've been friends for a period of time, and he's, you know, intrigued by our success. And we were talking, and you know, our backgrounds are different. He was more on the install side. I'm more of the business side. Different mindset, just different skill set. What's interesting is it's like some of the struggles that he's having is that, in my mind, that his business has never, it's never changed. It hasn't adapted to the climate that we're in. Part of the ability of being able to adapt is the ability to acknowledge that just things aren't the same. You know, this, as you know, that we've been in this business for so long, COVID was like a joke. It was
for many people, it was a gift,
including us. It was a gift. But now all of a sudden, the grind has started again, and nobody really understands. Like, this is the consumer is harder to get in touch with. They have less money. The finance companies are, you know, crapping out on financing every person that didn't deserve credit. And the business has changed. And a lot of these companies, in my mind, are not prepared. And, you know, for some of us, it's going to be a great opportunity. For others of us, they may not be around. I mean, it's just the reality of the situation. So I think you have to look, you just have to continue to look at things differently. And your business has to evolve.
And I know who you're talking about. And I remember having some conversations with them, you know, many years ago. And I think one of the big differences between them and you, quite frankly, is you were in business to make money. You understood how to make a profit. And when your profit level is where it should be, you know, we say north of 15%, I think is what everybody should aspire to. You've told me this, I don't know how many times, you can make mistakes. You could try new things. But when you're on the edge, when you're at razor thin margins, even though they're doing tens of millions of dollars, unless they've changed their model, now, I don't know if they have or not, but it seems to me like they probably haven't. And so when you're not as profitable, it's hard to change. It's hard to do the hard things. The only reason you are able to shut down your business, essentially shut down your business, and probably in your case lose millions of dollars, was because you run a very profitable business.
Just as I was just getting over the month and the depression, you have to remind me again of how much money I lost.
Well, yeah, but again, you know, I had to call you and tell you, you know,
you had
every
to
week.
Me off. Even I need
yeah,
to
yeah, tell
even
you you're going to make it up.
Listen, in fairness, you know, to everybody who's listening, I didn't always understand what I understand now. Like, you know, and I use the analogy, like, we used to get into an elevator and an event like Accelerate, and people would be like, how much volume do you do? How much volume do you do? How much volume do you do? And you'd be like, I do 10 million. I do 20. I do 30. What you fail to recognize is just because you're doing the 10, the guy who's doing 30 may be making less money than you are doing 10. And at the end of the day, the scorecard is how much money you make and keep, not how much volume we do. I didn't always know that. And so it took me many years and multiple conversations with you, candidly, to get to understand that the difference in gross margin and raising your price is really your own mindset. It has nothing to do with the consumer. You're still going to sell 30% of the people you see if you're relatively good. It doesn't matter what your price is. It's your own mindset. And that's where, you know, it's the same thing of like, I see billboards of people doing their own ads. If the you don't know the billboard works, you just like to drive by the billboard and see your face on the billboard. God bless you. I'm not that guy.
Yeah.
But if you are, that's fine. But I would at least hope that it works. You want to do your own commercial? Great. As long as it works, it's good.
Yeah.
But if it doesn't work, you know, your friends see you on television, you're a superstar, you have no money. That's where I draw the line. To me, I learned it over time.
And that is the beauty of, I guess, podcasts now, not only this one, but we get to have these discussions. You know, when you and I were coming up, we didn't have podcasts. We would have to go to events all the time. If we were lucky, we had a mentor or two. But today on a podcast like this, I mean, the people that our listeners are listening to are people that if they get a little bit of what you're talking about here, it'll change their business. And what you're essentially saying here is that you did hard things. You're not taking the easy path. You know, the easy path is, well, we have a step selling system. Let them go in the room, let them learn it, and then we'll throw them out there and see what happens. I mean, that's the extreme, right? That may have worked during COVID, but it doesn't work in the real world. It didn't work before, and it certainly doesn't work after. And now what we've got to really look at is wherever you are in your business, you have to look at every process that leads to money and continually be asking yourself, how do we make this better? How do we make this better? How do we make more money on this same volume of business? Those are hard questions and hard things to actually execute on.
So what's interesting is I was listening to your podcast with, is it Kyle from...
Yep.
He's an ace ball player, Kyle.
Yep, Kyle Erdman.
So I'm listening to this podcast, fascinating story. And there's some, I mean, you know, for the most part, I'll go 99% with the exception of me. Every guest you have, I've gotten something out of. Like literally, I listen to everyone, I get something out of everything. So I started thinking about what he was talking about. And I don't know how this whole thing transpired, but I'm listening and I'm thinking. And the next day I wake up and I'm like, okay. So let's go through a home improvement customer's experience. Let's go through their journey, okay? They call my company, they call his company, they call a third company. We've all scripted the same way. We have Megan script our scripts. So the first company, the customer calls, are like, oh, okay, they're asking me questions. This is great. Second company, like, oh my God, the first company asked the same questions. And by the time the third company comes, like, okay, I'm the homeowner. I'm not going to have both people home. Here's what this is, blah, 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 blah. Now the salesperson goes out to the house, scripted the exact same way, talking about the same thing. By the time the third guy comes out, the homeowner's just like, I can't do this anymore. Like, this is just brutal. You're here 4 hours. You start out at 10,000 and you're down to 3,000. Like, oh, and it took me 3.5 hours to get there. But the other guy did the same thing. Every process that we have that anybody who's gone to these events has not individualized it to themselves. They've taken it off the shelf and said, let's do it this way because Scott's successful doing it this way, so it's got to work. What's interesting is that we only take pieces of these things and put them together and then create the successful model after it's been tried and practiced. But we want to be different. But yet, every home improvement experience is like buying a Model T Ford. It's black. It's black. And it's so asinine. you know, why is Heavyset successful? Because it's a different way to address a consumer's requirement of setting a lead. They don't want to talk to my people. But we don't acknowledge that. We want to keep banging up our head against the wall. Let me have my call center call you. Forget all the regulations and everything. Let's just put it in there because that's the way we've always done it. Oh, and by the way, it's got to be done between 9 and 5 because that's when my call center is open. It makes no sense. And as technology gets further along, this gap becomes bigger and bigger. It's substantial. And that's what blows my mind. And I don't know what, like Kyle's whole thing with his dad and how he, I'm like, I got to meet this guy. But like his dad was thinking one way and I'm thinking another with my wife. I'm like, oh my God, I love this guy because this is what everybody in our industry should be doing for their business, regardless of how big they are.
You'll meet him Monday and the wife is a powerhouse.
There's so many great stories, but it's a constant story of innovation and a constant story of change. And that's where a lot of people just don't get it.
My new book, The Manifesto, The Wealthy Contractor Manifesto, in that one of the main points of that is that every one of us that did something, you know, different in our business, we got to a point where we said, enough is enough. I can't take this anymore. And from that moment, that defining line, you move forward. For me, I tell the story in the book, but it took 5 years for us from the time I made the decision. I had been in business for, God, 20 something years, and I just wasn't getting ahead. Finally, I drew a line that said, enough is enough. He had the same kind of story, right? He was just with his dad. They were plotting along, not making a whole lot of money. And finally, he said, I can't do this. Enough is enough. I got to do something better. I got to do something different.
Which is amazing because I worked for my dad, as you know, and my success happened after my dad died. And I think part of the reason for that was because in the back of my mind, I would have always gone to him for something that I wanted to do, even though he was not related to this particular business. I would go to him and I'd be like, what do you think of this? And he'd be like, oh, what do you need to do this for? Or why are you going to do this? Meanwhile, I made all my money after he died.
How many conversations do I have with people about their money issues? And a lot of times what we don't realize is that our money issues come from our parents, our upbringing, and we don't recognize them. Just like you didn't really recognize it. You kind of knew, okay, what he's saying is this and that. But what you didn't want, it subconsciously, is maybe you didn't want to show him, hey, look, I'm going to do the opposite of what you're telling me to do, and I'm going to get rich. For whatever reason, you know, I know you had a wonderful relationship. I know you loved and adored your father and respected him. And so maybe you didn't want to hurt his feelings, or maybe you didn't want to, I don't know, whatever. That's what therapy's for. But it's worth exploring.
I think that's why family businesses fail, because you sit around and you're like, your dad is your dad. He knows better than you. He's older than you. He's been through more than you. So you defer to him. But in the meantime, what you fail to recognize on the other side is your dad, if he's in his 50s and you're in your 30s, he's like, I don't want to lose money. I got to live another 30 years with the money I have. I can't continue to take risks. I don't want to do this. But you're at 25, 30 years old. You're like, I got no kids. I have no family. I'm going to take a risk. But your dad's like, no, don't do it. And you've been in my building in Lake Worth. It's like, my dad, if I saw what this building looked like before I bought it, he would have been like, you're crazy. Don't do it. And I would not have done it.
I found a house down the street from my parents. I was 27 or 28 years old. Down the street from my parents, I find this house. It was kind of a dump. It was perfect. It was exactly what I was looking for. It was $252,000. And my dad tells me, you're crazy. Why are you going to go buy that house? You're renting and you're paying this $2,000, whatever it was a month. Why are you going to go and get a mortgage and do all that? I'm like, that's the dumbest advice ever. But, you know, one of the things I realized is even as a, you know, in my 40s and 50s, I didn't want to let my parents down. I didn't want them to think bad of me because now all of a sudden I became successful. And until I realized what the hell was going on, it was hard for me to get off of it. But when I had my enough is enough, I'm like, I got to put all that shit aside, everything. I had to put all that shit aside so that I go where I want to go.
That, you know, it goes back to what we talk about all the time. It's mindset.
Yeah.
So,
which took a while for you to get.
It took me 40 years.
It took a while.
Nobody learned slower than me. I really thought volume was the answer. Volume will solve our problem. That's the message. You know, and you could say it 100 times to somebody and they just don't get it. They don't get it. And that's where, you know, our industry, like looking at things and changing things and looking from when we got into this business, if you were doing advertising, you were 10% was a lot. Like you're like, put 10%
right.
into marketing, you throw it into something. Now you can't survive with a 10% marketing rate and grow your business. There's no way.
That's right.
But in order to get above 10%, you have to raise your price. So it's just, you learn. And that's the problem. We're stubborn.
So one of the really cool things that you developed in-house was Heavyset. In response to, hey, people, they don't want to do things the old way. There's a whole new way of doing things. I don't think we've ever really talked about Heavyset here. Why don't you tell people a little bit about what Heavyset is? Because it's cool as hell. And a lot of companies are using it. You started it. You know, obviously you built it for yourself, but tell everybody just a little bit about what Heavyset is.
On a high level, we determined that we were getting a lot of leads after hours, after our call center was closed. And so we decided to develop a program that basically allowed a customer to schedule a lead right into your CRM in real time. So there's a lot of software out there that allows you to schedule a lead, or a customer say, hey, I want an estimate, and they fill out the information and they say 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock. And then the company calls them back the next day and says, well, Brian, we don't have 10 o'clock. We have 2. Can you do 2 instead of 10? And it's just an unprofessional way of doing business. So we developed this program in which you can effectively schedule the lead in real time, and it's confirmed using artificial intelligence by text. We used it for 3 years, and I happened to show it to Mark Curry, I think. And Mark Curry was like, oh my God, this is amazing. And I showed it to a couple other people, and they're like, oh my God, can we buy this? I'm like, I really didn't even think about it as a business, but you know, let me think about it. So since that time, I think we now have 75 or 80 paying customers. Some of the largest home improvement companies are using it. But the advantage of it, what's interesting is that it brings your lead cost down because it enables you to advertise in hours when your competitors are closed. So you can run Google at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night. Like we get, you know, 20 to 25% of our leads come in overnight and they're already set. It's an actual confirmed appointment. What's also interesting is that we have a 22% higher close rate on a Heavyset lead. I think it's a 16% lower cancellation rate on the lead itself, and a like $1,000 higher average order by NSLI. But equally important is that we structured the ability of Heavyset to really work for small companies. It's designed for us, but you get the advantage of having all these large companies give you good ideas on best practice that have been implemented in a Heavyset, and it's not an expensive
program. It's very reasonably priced. Very reasonable.
And we charge by usage. So if you're not using it or it doesn't work for a month, you know, you don't get killed. It's not a huge fee. It's like, but the more inquiries you get and the more it's used, the more you pay. And the last part about it is, and because people ask me this all the time, I'm not suggesting that it's in lieu of your call center. It's in addition to your call center. And so we compare metrics to Heavyset against our call center because it's best practice. And so it makes our call center better. It makes our lead set better. And it does a lot of other things like drip campaigns and stuff for leads that, you know, would take too long to explain. But it's a viable program. And the marketplace, I mean, candidly, it's exploding. We hired a salesperson who, you know, Mary Beth. She's amazing. We're signing up clients literally every three to four times a day at the rate she's going. And it's a lot of fun.
We'll put the link to the website. What is the website?
Heavyset.tech.
I remember when you first had the idea for it and you first started building it, the thing that got me was like, oh my God, this is genius, was the whole after hours thing. Because now you're right. You can run Google Leads or a pay-per-click all night.
And they're less expensive.
And your competitors aren't there.
Right. Not only are they not there, but if they were there, they can't reach the customer.
Exactly.
So that's the crazy thing. Like if you analyze your ability to reach somebody at 11 o'clock at night who inquired to you at 11 o'clock at night, you'll never get in touch with that person. And we get in touch with that person. If you're using aggregators, there's no better speed to lead than Heavyset. So it's like, it's a win for everybody.
I'm looking at my own behavior and like the guy that cuts my hair, I can't text. They don't have a platform where I can go in and create my own appointments. And now, because I love the guy and I've been with them for so long, I got a call, I got to go through dates, I got to deal with his schedule and my schedule and what time and all of that. And then I'm lucky if I get a text reminder, whereas the other place that I had to go to when he wasn't available, oh my God, it was so easy. I go online, I pick my time, I pick the guy to cut my hair, they send me a text message, it goes into my calendar, and that's, I don't got to talk to anybody. Yeah. It was super easy.
What's crazy about it is like we use it at home shows. So yeah. I have my competitors filling out a slip to call you, and I'm sitting there with Heavyset filling your name out and putting it in a database, and then while you're standing there, it goes right into your calendar and gives you the date we're going to be there. Tell me a better customer experience than that at a home show or Canvas.
And this goes right back to where we started this conversation. That's just one more thing that hopefully, and you've proved it, but when you implement, it drives the cost of lead down. You do more with less. So those are the things that we've got to be looking for as owners of home improvement businesses. It's not only about, and I guess we can wrap up with this. You've heard both me and Scott talk about this, is that more and more and more is not necessarily your answer. And that's where everybody wants to go. That's lazy thinking. And that is a result of you being so busy and working on crap that you shouldn't be working on as an owner, instead of sitting in your office like he does all day and just thinking about stuff and coming up with these ideas of how do we get 1 point better here? How do we get 3 points better there? That's what we are hopefully trying to communicate in this episode.
And I would just add to what you're saying is that the smartest guys in our industry that we have the fortune of being good friends with, they're all doing that. Like we're all talking and communicating on what are you doing? How are you paying your salesman? What, give me the pitfalls. We've all tried. Like somebody called me today and says, I want to give a cooler bag when I go give an estimate because I think that when I give something, they'll give me more time. And I'm like, that's a great idea. All these things have been tried before. It doesn't mean that they can't be tried again and they won't be successful today, and just as if not more successful possibly tomorrow. But you got to try. You can't just continue to wake up every day and do the same thing. It's not going to work.
The people that are listening to this that were also at Accelerate will hear a lot more of this, because a lot of Accelerate is on this topic of efficiency and how do we do things better. I think that this is the year where things are going to be really, really good, but for people that have their, going to have their shit together. So thank you, my friend, for being here.
You're welcome. Anytime. Love
Appreciate you. By the way, if you like this episode, leave a review, please. Let other people know what you think about the podcast and make sure to subscribe. I think only about 15 or 20% of the listeners are actually subscribed. And so if you subscribe, you get the episodes right as they're released. It just lets us know that we're doing a good job for you. Until next time, to all of you listening, this is Brian Kaskavalsian, and this is the Wealthy Contractor Podcast. Hope you enjoyed this week's episode.
for insights on skyrocketing your home improvement business and accelerating your journey to the success, wealth, and freedom you've always dreamed about, be sure to get your free copy of my best-selling book, The 7 Secrets to Becoming a Wealthy Contractor, at www.thewealthycontractor.com. And don't forget to follow us on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss an episode. See you next time.